Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, cadet.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
It sounds like you had an amazing trip.
I did. What have you been up to?
Well, I did play Julius Caesar in a pizza commercial that they're going to, get this, show in movie theaters.
Wow, look at you. Pizza.
Et crudite.
What?
That was my line. I played Little Caesar's dad, Big Caesar, in the backstory part of the commercial, which is funny because most commercials don't even have a backstory part. Also, Little Caesar's doesn't sell crudite. Oh, man, my part's definitely going to get cut, huh?
Just like the real Caesar.
Hey, that's right.
That sounds very good. That is from BoJack Horseman, which has new episodes streaming from Friday on Netflix. And James here to tell us more about it. James, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So, music to my ears. It's streaming on Netflix.
have you not seen it before?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you, approach with caution, because the first season isn't great. The first season is sort of a bit weird. This is about an anthropomorphized horseman named BoJack Horseman, right? It's a very kind of pun-filled literal show. And he's played by Will Arnett, whose voice you'll immediately recognize. He's Job in Arrested Development and in a million other things. And in the show, and it's a very kind of well-worn plot in general. It's about a washed-up former actor who was in a sort of 1980s sitcom that was really beloved and popular. And now it's 20 years later and he kind of wants to stretch himself dramatically while he's also dealing with his alcoholism and depression. And that kind of thing is what, that's a well-worn idea,
yeah.
This idea of a washed-up actor, except this time he's a horse. And in the world in which it takes place, it's instead of being Hollywood, it's Hollywoo, because the D fell off the Hollywood side and everyone's just going with it. And various other characters are different animals. So in the clip we heard there, we heard the human Diane speaking with her estranged husband, Mr. Peanut Butter, who is a Labrador, right? And it's all, nobody bats an eyelid about these animals. It's just accepted. Except every now and again, you know, a cat will cough up a fur ball and a lizard will, you know, snap its tongue at something. So they have these side gags, but you just go with it. If you start BoJack Horseman, and I highly, Tom,
yes,
recommend you do.
Great.
Okay. The first, maybe the first season might be 12 episodes, I can't remember. The first eight of them are just fine. They kind of go through the motions, relatively straightforward. You'll get a few laughs. And it just really begins to kick off towards the end of the first season. But by season two, it just becomes a piece of sublime television.
Really?
It is so well written by this guy named Raphael Waxberg Bob, which even sounds like a made-up name, right?
It does.
Waxberg, right? He went to high school with the artist. Her name is Lisa Hannawalt. And they were in a theatre club together. And they were kind of, I guess, theatre nerds is the parlance you use to describe these kind of people. And he went on to Hollywood and sort of wrote for a few sitcoms. And eventually some production house came to him saying, look, we've struck a deal with Netflix to produce an animated comedy. Could you think of something that we could do? And he remembered his good friend Lisa, who has been drawing these animal characters for years, and kind of thought, how about a depressed horse called Horseman? And pitched it. And they sort of said, yeah, all right, give it a go. And it has now, I think, become arguably the best show on Netflix.
Ooh,
it is,
boy,
yeah.
There's a big thing to say.
You know, I say that in the full knowledge that the techs are already rolling in,
yes,
supporting me.
They
and
are.
I know this.
Supporting you. We'll see. We'll see.
And what I will say is, I was not unsurprised when doing my research to look at how each season had been critically received. On Rotten Tomatoes, I guess we'll say, in this side of the Atlantic, which is admittedly an aggregate of reviews and to be taken like all tomatoes with a big pinch of salt, right?
I think it's taken as the Bible.
It is, season one is about 65% approval.
Yeah.
Seasons two, 100%. Season three, 100%. Season four,
really?
97%.
Yeah.
And what I've seen so far of season three, which is only 2.5 episodes, are right up there. What I love about this show is it explores all of the tropes of Hollywood And it also delves really deeply into really serious and dark and sad. I mean, sad is perhaps the best adjective to describe this comedy, which I don't know is a selling point, but it is very sad. It deals a lot with, you know, with death, with addiction, with depression, all of these kinds of things. But yet it cuts right through the sadness, this rich vein of sadness, I'll say, because it is a very rewarding sadness, with these moments of just absolute absurdist humour and incredibly brilliant sight gags and puns throughout. I mean, the writing is as sort of lyrically dexterous as that of Arrested Development or something, where you have all these puns flying at you. So it really rewards repeated viewing. But it's just what I found in watching the first two episodes that I've seen, I would read a novel about each episode, you
really?
Know, as in I found the particularly in the second episode, Diane, who's voiced by Alison Brie, who people will know from GLOW, Glamorous Ladies of Wrestling, and Mad Men fame. She plays Diane Nguyen, who is a Vietnamese character, which is a bit controversial now. You shouldn't really be casting, you know, white people to play Asian people. Mm. People don't like this as a thing anymore. Anyway, in this episode, Diane goes to Vietnam and has to write an article, 10 reasons why she goes to Vietnam. And I would watch a feature film based on that episode. I would read the novel very happily to my book club going, wasn't that great? I really loved it. So I just cannot praise BoJack Horseman highly enough.
You're sending me running towards this.
Good.
As I say,
but
what I love
with
about Netflix
the warning,
is it's there.
With the warning that the first 8 episodes are grand.
Is that 8 hours?
No, 25 minutes.
Okay, so it's 4 hours.
Yes.
4 hours of my life.
Yes.
I can sell that at home.
Good, okay.
I can sell that. Because the payback, I'm looking at the reviews in Rotten Tomatoes and it's unbelievable. I put a lot of store in Rotten Tomatoes.
Do
I
you?
Really do, yeah.
I
find with Netflix that it pitches films like, and you can never tell whether it's a gem or an absolute pile.
Very much so.
And just Netflix, if you see 100 or 97% in Rotten Tomatoes, give it a go.
So BoJack Horseman is a real critical darling. And I think it is relatively popular with viewers out there as well. It's just after winning the Emmy for Best Animated Comedy. But, I mean, the Best Animated Comedy is like, it's a second prize, really. This deserves kind of the Best Comedy. Like, this is up there with the best of comedy you would see on HBO.
Yeah. So I heard somebody giving out about winning Best Female Chef. She was just Best Chef.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right, that is called BoJack Horseman. It is on Netflix. And in the world of TV news, this disgraced CBS executive, it's going back to 2004 and Janet Jackson.
And the notorious wardrobe malfunction. What I had forgotten is her breast was only exposed for 9/16 of a second.
9/16.
Yes. Anyway, but it was enough, evidently, to drive this guy into apoplectic rage. So his name is Les Moonves, which is a great name. And he was high up in CBS, which was broadcasting the Super Bowl at the time. And he believed the whole thing was a stunt. And whether it was or it wasn't, is not for me to say. People can watch the 9/16 themselves and come to their own conclusion. But essentially, when it happened and Justin Timberlake ripped off her bodice breast covering, I don't know how to describe it.
Breast covering.
he believed it was
middle age.
He believed it was
middle ages, even.
And he blacklisted both of them from playing at the Grammys, which was also going to be broadcast at CBS that year. And he said they needed to come in and apologize. And Justin Timberlake came in on his knees, allegedly crying, and all was forgiven. He appeared on the Grammys. He won 2 Grammys that year. Janet Jackson, on the other hand, sort of refused to apologize, saying this was an accident. This was not nobody's fault. I'm not going to apologize. And he blacklisted her. He said she could not appear in the Grammys.
He followed through.
He could not. She could not appear on MTV, on VH1, on any of the radio stations owned by Viacom, which I think is owned by Disney. She had an album coming out, which I don't remember it, but she had an album coming out just after that completely tanked because it got no press at all.
Okay, naturally, yeah.
And it has now come out because a lot of allegations have come out of sexual misconduct against this man, Moonves. Of course, he's been sort of silently moved away from the company with a nice golden handshake of roughly $100 million, but he's getting some, I guess, social comeuppance.
Wow. That is very Game of Thrones of him, isn't it?
Very much so.
You make a mistake here, I'll eradicate you from history. That had a big impact on her career too.
Evidently,
didn't it?
Yeah.
Amazing. Also in TV news, Alan Moore's iconic comic books They're the Watchmen series.
Yeah, so Alan Moore is the co-creator of Watchmen, and that's already been turned into a movie in, you know, maybe a decade ago by Zack Snyder. A controversial movie. Some people like it, some people don't, but it tells the story of sort of a second generation superhero team in New York in a sort of Reagan 1980s America. And it's going to be turned into a TV show for HBO. They've ordered a full season. It'll come probably in 2020. And it's not going to be a direct translation of the source material to the screen. It's going to be updated and actually take place after the events of Watchmen. And it'll star Jeremy Irons and Don Johnson.
Nice. Jeremy Irons, particular.
Don Johnson, because it's a name I haven't heard in a very long time.
That's true. Yeah. Miami Vice,
yes.
Right? Yes. And then the other title of his that's going to be made into a show is Swamp Thing, which I don't know that much about, but it seemingly is about a plant monster that sort of absorbs the consciousness of a botanist and does some very violent rampaging in a forest. And now for that one, you're actually going to have to get a whole new streaming service because DC, DC are launching their own, we'll say, Netflix called DC Universe, where they're going to be broadcasting their own DC show. So they obviously think there is enough interest out there. And I mean, obviously DC is one of the biggest comic producers, publishers in the world. And I guess now movie producers, although their movies are questionable in quality. They think there's enough quality out there to bring people to a subscribing streaming service.
Well, I think there's enough of these things already.
There are plenty.
I have to say. We're going to have a quick break, 53106 for your text, and let us know in particular what you think of BoJack Horseman and if it is the best thing Netflix has ever done. That was what you said, wasn't it, James?
Yes, it was.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.
Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, the Hearsts, even the Kennedys, Irish peasants, for God's sakes, they all managed it. This should be my legacy. The Getty dynasty. Timmy, dead. George, dead. Ronald pissing away what meager talent he possesses playing movie producer. Paul, a spineless drug addict. Gordon, you'll be delighted to learn, my dear, is writing a symphony. A f***ing symphony! Is it to spite me, do you think, that they so willfully turn their back to me, to the man who begat them?
That is from Trust, which started last night on BBC Two, repeated on Friday and Saturday night. Was that Donald Sutherland?
That was Donald Sutherland, yes, playing J. Paul Getty, who in 1973 was the richest man in the world and heir of, well, I guess creator rather, of the Getty fortune, which was entirely built on oil and oil products. And the show is kind of interesting. So it comes from a writer named Simon Beaufoy, who people will know, not by name perhaps, but certainly by the quality of the things he's produced. He rose to fame when he wrote The Full Monty.
Yep.
And then won an Oscar writing or adapting Slumdog Millionaire. And if anyone has read the book as Slumdog Millionaire is based on Q&A, he did quite the job in adapting it, because it's the worst book I've ever read in my life. So fair play to him. So, and he pitched this idea of creating a sort of a multi-season story all about the Getty family, starting with this 1973 incident in which John Paul Getty III, then 16 years old, was kidnapped in Italy, and John Paul Getty I refused to pay the ransom despite being the richest man in the world, claiming that, believing it all to be a hoax essentially, and claiming that paying the ransom would sort of enable further kidnappers to take his other grandchildren and start a little industry of its own. However, as you can hear from the clip there, he also wasn't perhaps the most warm-hearted, patriarchal type. So there are other issues going on there as well.
Am I allowed to ask you what happened in that case? Or do we now tune in and watch?
So, well, people might already know, because this is coming out not very long after a feature film called All the Money in the World, starring Michelle Williams, Mark Wahlberg, originally Kevin Spacey, and then laterly Christopher Plummer, who replaced him early and was nominated for an Oscar earlier this year for playing John Paul Getty in the exact same story. So people may already know, though I believe this TV version takes a slightly different approach to its interpretation of what happened, particularly with regard to John Paul Getty III, as in the kidnappee, because he's dead now and you can't defame the dead. Okay. So they have taken quite a brutal approach to their portrayal of him. But that's not to say that the Getty family hasn't launched legal proceeding against the show. Now, it is, as I said, written by Simon Beaufoy, but I think perhaps a bigger draw for the audience is the fact that it's directed by Danny Boyle, British director, Oscar winner,
Olympic ceremony creator.
Never to be forgotten. And certainly it is very much in their style. It's made by FX, the US channel, who are the same people behind American Horror Story and The People vs. OJ, American Crime Story, and the second one as well about Versace shooting. And what I, as a network, particularly as a dramatic network, their calling card is camp. All right. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean, camp can be sublime when it is played properly. Particularly, I think People vs. OJ is a perfect example of how camp can work, sort of building up this sort of ridiculousness to the point that it is just utterly entertaining. And I felt that is the tone that they were trying to strike in the first episode. But tonally, it didn't quite strike camp for me. Okay. It sort of veered into very strange territory where I wasn't quite exactly on the same page as what I think they were hoping I was on, particularly with regard to sort of laying out the background of the story, because you see very early on that John Paul Getty Sr., as played by Donald Sutherland, has, you know, a harem, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, of women living with him in this giant mansion.
Harem. Just for, you know, for the sake of being on radio and having people correct you, go for harem.
Okay, I will. And but it doesn't necessarily, like, it took me a while to realise that's who they were, because there were just all these women around and I was saying, who are these women? Are they part of the family or not? And eventually it did become clear, but and I'm not saying everything has to be laid out in black and white, but when it's sort of a distraction, that's not a good thing either. So what is attracting me to return viewing here is the pedigree of everyone involved.
That was what was striking me. Donald Sutherland, Brendan Fraser,
Hilary Swank. Yeah. And Harris Dickinson plays Paul. People might know him from Beach Rats, which was a kind of an indie movie out last year or a couple of years ago that was very critically acclaimed as well. He's a young British actor. He's playing 16. He's obviously at least 26. You know how it is. But this is definitely, look, I didn't love it, trust, okay, by any means. To use a little pun, did I trust that there's something here to see? Yes. And okay, will I be returning? Yes, okay, but with trepidation.
Before we go on to our next one, can I ask you briefly about Bodyguard?
I haven't seen the most recent episode, but I have.
I know is I've missed it. Somebody told me it was on Netflix.
It's not on Netflix. It's on BBC.
I sat through 2 minutes of an Indian film called Bodyguard.
I don't think that's it.
Yeah, it took me a while. I was thinking about the BBC is really pushing out the, you know, the kind of bringing in all the different
multi-cultural. So have you seen Line of Duty?
Strains. Yeah, it's Jed Mercurio.
If you like his kind of stuff,
I do.
Then this is that you're going to love it, because it's all about plot and plot twist and plot.
Why am I not able to see it?
Because of I don't want to blame Brexit for everything, but Brexit, I guess, and also National Board is saying we can't access.
I think it's silly.
We can't access the BBC.
The BBC are living in the past, and I think we live in a world of instant gratification when it comes to TV.
That's very
true.
And
they need to get on the boat.
You get on to the BBC Director General.
I just wanted to make that point.
Okay.
Now then, also has come to our shores, and I would say at last, is the Irish version of Who Do You Think You Are? I think we have a little clip from it, the first episode.
His first port of call is to Westland Row in Dublin to meet genealogist Anne-Marie Smith to find out more about the musical connections in his family.
Okay, well, I did some digging. You do indeed have some showbiz in your family. And it was Phyllis Bridgman,
Phyllis,
who was your grandaunt.
Right.
And she appeared in the Queen's Theatre.
Okay.
In 1943.
Third edition of Happiness Ahead, with Aoire O'Reilly in the leading role. Local talent includes the latest Queen's discovery, Phyllis Bridgman.
Yeah.
Who proved a great success.
So, really. That was an exciting time for her, you know. She was only about maybe 17, when she started there.
Yeah.
You know, so you can see where, you know, obviously the music comes in to your own,
absolutely,
your own career,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Big time.
Damien Dempsey there in the inaugural episode, isn't it, of Who Do You Think You Are?
Of this series. It has been on RT before.
Oh, okay. The music. sensational. That little doodle doo 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 is just so beautiful. And
it's been a huge success for the BBC. So and much like Janet Jackson's bodice breast covering, it dates from 2004 as well. Since 2004, the BBC has sold this format extremely successfully around the world to, I think, about 20 countries, because it's a very easy format and to sell. I mean, you get a well-known figure, you trace their genealogical line back to wherever it's interesting.
Sometimes very interesting.
Sometimes extremely interesting, and sometimes not quite as interesting. Yeah. Now, Damien Dempsey's was nice and varied. I thought Damien Dempsey's was like a prime example of what to expect from an Irish person on Who Do You Think You Are, particularly someone from Dublin, because it traced back to, to the War of Independence and back to Daniel O'Connell. And then another branch of the family went emigrating across to Boston. And, and it seemed to tick all the boxes you would kind of expect. And I think that is perhaps, and I'm now opening myself up to great criticism from the audience here, that is perhaps a limitation of Ireland as a country for Who Do You Think You Are? Because we're not a conquering country, so we haven't had an empire that has spread out across the world. We have admittedly gone all over the world, but roughly as the same kind of people, as immigrants there to work.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the stories are going to be somewhat samey because of that.
Yeah, I think still interesting, though, despite that. And I think, because we know our own history so much, you're watching Damien's and you're thinking, what's going to happen to his family around the 1916 era? What's going to happen to his family during the Locket? What's going to happen to his family during the famine? And then where it gets really poignant with him is what happens to his family with our later and unsavory history.
That's very true.
I think it's granddad.
Yes.
Ends up in letter frack. Yes. Which he describes as Auschwitz.
Yeah. A boy who was photographed with his grandfather goes on to describe it as that. And
yes.
And that is very poignant. And it's nice that nice is not the right adjective to use here. It's sort of interesting that the history can be checkered, with shades of light and dark as well. It makes it more compelling viewing because life is full of shades of light and dark as well. Other people who I think are going to be on this season include Bertie Ahern and Samantha Power, the former US ambassador to the UN, who obviously is of Irish extraction, Pat Short, and others that have now escaped.
Well,
what I think is interesting about it is how much they can, how much sort of interest they can manage to wring out of someone sitting down at a desk with a sheet going, there's your great 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 grandmother and maybe something happened to her, and we're like, yeah, maybe something did.
Well, I have to say with the British one, which I watch a lot of, sometimes little twists and turns come down the road that are really truly remarkable, and I think an awful lot of our generation are going to have grandfathers who were in the British Army and on the wrong side during 1916.
That's true.
And let's see who they end up being.
And we still can't get to the Eiffel Tower.
Both of my grandparents were in the British Army in 1916, so they fought through the entire World War.
Right.
So who knows what happened to them? We'll have the same questions asked. James, fascinating as always. I'll be checking out that Netflix one in particular. 4 hours to get through and then it gets good, based on what you're saying to me. James, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.
Thanks, Tom.